Welcome to Blue Peg, Pink Peg, the bi-weekly podcast where two avid board gamers and their occasionally reluctant wives discuss board games, relationships, and the interaction between the two. During this episode, the Blue Pegs discuss their recent gameplays, including their thoughts on Keyflower and learning Pathfinder the card game, and recent gaming news, including a few games that they're looking forward to at Essen 2013. And all the Pegs review Debonair and Escape, the Curse of the Temple, as well as some of their favorite game themes. And now, the designers of the team play guessing game, What the Toddler Flushed, the Pink Pegs, Carrie and Christina, and the designers of the risk management damage control game, Just Apologize, Stupid, the Blue Pegs, Patrick and Rob.
Everybody, we are Blue Peg, Pink Peg. I'm your host, Rob.
And I am Patrick. Welcome to episode 8.
Episode number 8. We are very, very close to double digits.
That's a true statement. Yeah. Hey, we hope you guys have been having a good couple of weeks. We have been into quite a bit. We've had something on our Facebook page that I think we want to talk about with you guys. We sent out a call to ask you guys what we should call you. And Rob, what was the result?
Rob, is it Plantical?
I think it is.
I think he had the winning suggestion.
Yeah.
His suggestion was Pegheads.
Yes.
I like it.
Yeah, it's a good suggestion. People seem to really like that. They seem to get the most response. Some other options we had were Lifers.
Lifers, I like that one.
Yeah, I did as well.
Peggers, completely Peggers. Out.
Yes, entirely out. But we did get one recommendation that we are not going to use for everyone, but we will use it for our kids.
Peglets.
Yes, the little
like
peglets.
It.
Yes.
I can't remember who said that, but whoever said that, thank you.
Yeah, that was very cool. So anyways.
Now, we reserve the right to change this later on down the road if we come up with something else that we like. But for now, Pegheads, it works for me.
Right. So Pegheads, thank you very much for your contributions there. Let's move on to some of our gameplay.
Yep. So I mentioned last episode about Spirium on Board Game Arena.
Yeah.
I wanted to do a little update. I've gotten a couple of plays of that game in,
uh-huh.
and I don't enjoy it on BGEA. I don't enjoy it on that.
You don't like it on Board Game Arena?
Yeah, well, it's one of those things that you have time to think, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, people will take their, like, each turn, they could take 5 minutes to
Jeez.
Take. So, you know, that game could take an hour to play if you have
That's
four people. And it's
long.
Just way too long. And you can't boot anybody. Like, let's say they leave the computer. You can't boot them until after 5 minutes. And if they take. Anyway, love the game. I don't like it on Board Game Arena.
Don't like the implementation.
I love Seasons. I love some of the other games.
Yeah. Those seem to move a little bit faster.
But this one, I don't know if it's just new and people are
That's
learning the rules.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking maybe you got a lot of people that haven't played it a lot at tabletop, and they're getting used to it.
I wonder how BGA, I guess, with the Board Game Arena, how do they make their money? Because they've been nabbing some incredible games lately.
That's a good question. I don't know.
They don't have any advertising.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no advertising on the site that I could see. So
yeah,
I'm just curious about
know.
That.
I don't know what their business model is. Their business model may be no business model. You know, I have been playing a lot of games recently, and one of them that I've teased a lot and that I'm finally going to talk about because I played it so much this week is Ghost Stories White Moon.
All right.
The expansion of Ghost Stories. We went into Ghost Stories in one of our prior episodes, and I talked about how much I enjoy this game, how much I love it. Recently got the White Moon expansion, which had been hard to get for quite some time. And I absolutely adore it. The things that are unique about it is it actually ups the ante in this game.
Oh, my God. How much more ante does
it? Well, it ups the thematic ante, and it just makes it harder. Here's what happens. There's a new group of haunters called Devourers.
Okay.
And they are lycanthrops, whatever. They're these beasts that eat people. Some are wolf-themed. Some are reptile-themed. And they go in, and they will eat villagers. You've got three villagers on each tile, and you're trying to go and pick those villagers up and bring them to the portal so they can get out of the city before they get eaten by a devourer. I know. It's nuts. And the cool thing is that if you lose enough of them, you'll lose the game. But the other thing is if you pull out the family, there are multiple memories. Some families are large. Some families are small. If you get mm-hmm. an entire family saved, you get an artifact, which is a special power that you can use against the haunter. Some are real powerful. Some are less so.
That's cool.
There's also this Su Ling, this good
incantation that will block the devourers and other haunters. And then there's a new tile, the Kung Fu, which allows you to exercise everything of a color on your board in one move if you do it successfully. There's a mystic barrier. You can create up this mystic barrier of moonstones that will protect the villagers. So there's a lot more going on, a lot more challenge, but a lot more opportunities. And I love this expansion. I think it really adds a lot of texture to the game. I do think thematically it kind of ups the ante. It feels, you know, you feel invested in these villagers that are getting right. eaten. And so you really want to get in there and get them. And then, again, it gives these really cool artifacts that are these neat little pieces that you can use. So I will give this one a big endorsement. If you like ghost stories, you haven't gotten this expansion, I say go out and get it. It is totally worth your time and money.
I've gotten a lot more Voluspa playing in. And I know you're giving me crap about mentioning that, but it is such a good game. We are definitely going to review that in the future.
Yeah, I like that game, too. You guys, I will say, you and Christina like it a lot more than I do. I really like it.
Well,
don't
Christina
get me wrong.
Is incredible at it. I know, like, as I mentioned, we've been moving. We haven't had a lot of time to have any dates or anything like that. So we had a little date day. We went on a hike. We went to, like, a local co-op. They have a little eatery place in there. We sat down. We broke out Voluspa, which is a tile-based playing game.
Right.
And we just played it right there at that co-op. And she is incredible. She is tearing me up in that game. I cannot beat her, and I don't know why.
Yeah, because she's very – I've played her with her at it, with you guys, both of you guys.
Right.
And she killed us when we played. I mean, she straight up ripped us a new one.
I kind of feel like she's looking at the board and then she goes into the matrix. Like, she sees all the zeros and ones and just knows how everything goes together.
Yeah, yeah. She definitely has a mind for it. And I don't. It's just like at some point I'm mathing everything out when it gets later in the game. I'm like,
right.
Oh, I know there are other options that I haven't considered, but I am going to just play something.
I also got to play Nothing Personal. Now, I know you've played this multiple times.
Yeah, we played
it. I hadn't gotten to play it yet. That was a pretty fun game.
That's a great game.
And what was interesting was we played it with a non-gamer really game at all, and he seemed to pick up on it. I mean, the initial rules, little overwhelming at first, but he picked up on it real fast, and it was a fun game.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great game. I think I was really impressed with how well he played. And how much he enjoyed it. It was a very accessible game. I think the fact that it's a game that involves a lot of social interaction makes it easier for even non-gamers to get into. I think we'll talk about it later.
Yeah, I think we should do a review down the road of that, too.
Yeah, but it was a fun play. I have played a game that I really want to talk about. I don't know if it's... I've been playing this a little bit. I don't know if this is something we'll review with the pegs, but because it's a little long... they might really like it. It's called Keyflower, and it is a game. It came out in 2012. Sebastian Bleasdale, Richard Breeze. It's an R&D Games board game. Game Salute has released it here in the U.S. And it's this really cool game. It's a bidding mechanic game, resource management, route selection, tile laying.
It sounds like it's like a mishmash of all awesome games.
Yeah, it really is. And the idea is that you're, you know, colonist, and you're bringing in these new ships, so you get these workers that are your primary resources that you use to bid on different cards. The neat thing about the game is that one of the things I like about this really elegant is that it plays up to six, so all the tiles are six-sided. And you bid upon them by placing your workers of a single color. Okay, so there's multiple colors, red, blue, and green. Red, blue, and yellow, and then there's a green one that's kind of a unique one. But you place those on there, and you bid with them. And if I start bidding with a yellow, only yellows can be used to bid on it there forward.
Okay.
Okay, but you put it on your side, the side of the six-sided tile that corresponds with where you are at the table. So it's real easy at a glance to know who's bidding on what. And you can move bids around, but you have to move the whole thing. And then once you get something, you put it in your village, and people can play on top of that, right? They can play workers on top of that and get the advantage of the tile.
Do you get a benefit of that?
Yeah, you get to keep their worker.
Oh.
So the next time, you've got an additional worker that you can use for bidding. And then there's a lot of in-game conditions. There's different seasons where different things will happen at different times. Different types of tiles will come out. And in the winter season, they're not really production tiles. They're all these tiles that are related to in-game. And a neat thing is that everybody has two secret tiles that are their secret goals. So they know those are going to come out in winter.
Mm-hmm.
And they can choose to put one or two of those tiles up for bid. And so in that last round, everybody's bidding on it. So your secret accomplishment, you know it, and you can decide whether or not you want to put it out to play, but you may or may not get to be the one that takes advantage of that because somebody else may outbid you on it.
This sounds like I got to see it on the table, but it sounds awesome.
Yeah, it is a great, great game. It is really dense. It is really, it's elegant. It as much as I'm talking about, you know, all these rules that seem overwhelming, when you play it, it plays very intuitively. Everything makes sense. I mean, there's these things regarding transporting resources and all that stuff. There's a lot more to it, but it makes sense. It all makes sense, and I love this game. I will continue to play it quite a bit. It is a real winner.
Sounds like you highly recommend it.
I do highly recommend it.
So, as I mentioned, I've read the rules of the Pathfinder Adventure Card Game. First of all, I've been driving around town with this car. With this game in my trunk, because on any moment I'm like, "Is anybody want to play a game?" I'm like, "Hey, I'd like to try this game."
Now you're at a gas station. Now, you're like, "Hey, buddy, you want to play Pathfinder?"
I have yet to play this game and really wanted to play it. So we had an opportunity to break it out.
Yeah,
it was Pink Peg, Christina, and I. Yep. We sat down. It is incredibly difficult to try to teach people new games when you don't know how to play the game yourself.
That game, well, the other thing about that game is, I mean, it may well prove to be a really remarkable game. I think it probably is going to be pretty cool.
Right.
But it has got a lot going on. It has got so much vocabulary to learn.
A lot of vocabulary to learn. I think once you, like any other game, it's going to be easy to know,
once you get into it.
But it was just like, I'm telling Christina and you all these rules, and I can just see it kind of glossing over. And at the same time, I'm like, well, wait a minute. I got to look up what this means because I don't remember because I've never played it.
Right,
even that little bit of the scenario we played, I am still super excited about this game and want to play it.
No, I think it's going to be a cool game, and it does sound like it's got some neat elements. It is a bit dense. I mean, like those cards with all those powers that you have, and you know, certain abilities relate to certain things. Certain things have to be banished if you don't have an ability. I mean, it's super involved.
I know, but I like that. I like how those cards interact differently with each character you pick. It is like role-playing without role-playing.
Yeah, no, I get that. And I'm not saying that I actually was quite intrigued by the game, but I did sort of, as we were playing through it, I was like, my heavens, there's a lot working here.
And here's what appealed to me. Maybe it's just my mindset when I play the game.
Right.
Like, when a card comes out, I think of the story involving that card. One of the monsters was called a sneak. The sneak has all this text on it, and Christina was looking at it going, well, what does this card do? And I'm like, well, the reason it does this is because it snuck up on you, and now you have to roll your perception to see if you know. And she's like, what are you, in my mind I have a whole thematic event that's occurred to your character, and she's like, this is boring.
I agree, and I think at the end of the day, I don't know that it's going to be one that's going to appeal to Christina, Pink Peg Christina, because of the fact that it really lives in the narrative.
Yes.
You know, and she's kind of like, just tell me what the game does.
Right.
You know? I think you and I will probably get into it more, and she may end up really liking it. I mean, I was, you know, she says that she didn't like Descent, but, you know, she had a pretty good time.
Yeah, she did have a lot of fun. Also am looking forward, a buddy of ours, Jeremy, is having an Arkham Day at his house because we're in October, and I always talk about Arkham Horror as a game I'll play once a year.
Yep, that time.
Well, that time has come.
Yeah.
So we're going to go over his house. We're going to have a whole Arkham H.P. Lovecraft themed day. We're probably going to play Arkham Horror and Elder Signs and watch, you know, some sort of H.P. Lovecraft movie about Cthulhu or something like that. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, no. I think Arkham Horror Day is, you know, this is a time of year for Arkham Horror Day. I imagine there are a lot of people getting little Arkham parties together.
Yep.
And I think it's going to be a good time to go out there and play that. I think the timing's right. I do like Arkham. I think it's got a lot going on with it. So I'm looking forward to playing that.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Also, I decided this year I wanted to try out something on Board Game Geek.
What's that?
Every year they have a Secret Santa, and like thousands of people do it.
Yeah.
So the rules are, I think you have to buy someone $50 worth of game, but sometimes people will go overboard and do that, buy more or whatever. And I guess that what they do is they look at your wish list and someone, a Secret Santa, will send you something.
Yeah.
Sounds like a lot of fun. I want to try it this year.
Okay. That's cool.
So if any of the pegheads out there have tried this in the past and they've had a good experience or a bad experience with Board Game Geek's Secret Santa, please let us know.
Yeah. No, that's cool. I'm a cynic. I think I'm probably going
to
end up
report back to you.
Yeah, I'll send out, some massively expensive game and get zombie dice in return.
You know what we could do? We could wait till I get my package and open it on air, you know, that kind of thing, and see what happens. Look, I got a bunch of Monopolies
that have been opened.
Thank you, Secret Santa.
Yeah. Well, listen, I have been very heavily focused, as you guys may know, International Spieltag Spiel.
On your Twitter.
Yep. Also, Essen. It starts October 24th through the 27th, so it's coming up pretty soon. As you guys may know, this is a huge, huge game release for Eurogames, something that I really am into. You know, there's some debate as to whether or not Gen Con is bigger or Essen is bigger. But yeah, we've been previewing some of the games that look more interesting to us. There are hundreds and hundreds of games that are going to be out there. We've been previewing some of the games that look more interesting to us that are going to be released at Essen for our European listeners. But also, you know, this is gives us a sense as far as what's going to be coming to America
soon.
Well, in some cases, maybe not soon. And we've been trying to focus, for the most part, on games that look like they've got they're behind publishers that do a lot of work in the United States, so they have good connections, so they're likely to bring these games over, and stuff that have, and you can kind of look at the production values of certain games and tell whether or not it's one that's likely to come to the U.S. So we have been previewing a game each day on our Twitter feed, and we'll continue to do that through the beginning of Essen. And after Essen, I'll probably have a little more to say about things that people have been, that really got people excited at the Spiel. But anyways, you know, I'm not going to talk about everything. Last Wheel's Getting Sacked, Blueprints, Tashkalar, Seven Swords. There's lots of games I'm really excited about. I do want to focus on a couple of them. The first one is one called Prosperity by Yastari Games. The reason this is significant, it's a Sebastian Bleasdale, guy who did Keyflower, with Reiner Knizia.
Oh, wow.
The designers. So two designers whose stuff I really like, who really put a lot of work into their games. Prosperity is a city builder, a la, you know, Suburbia, and or Ginkopolis, or any of the other city builder games that there are out there. The thing that's kind of interesting about this one is that you have to manage pollution, and you use technology through different decades. So you start out in the 60s, I think, and you move through to 2030.
All right.
And you keep refining your city to deal with the growing threat of pollution.
Now, does pollution increase as you go?
It does. It does. As you do certain things, that'll create a pollution issue. Income, you know, may create that issue.
Can you affect other cities' pollution? Like
I don't think so. I don't think so. That's not the sense that I got from the game. The board is really nice. The pieces are, the art is gorgeous. I mean, it is just really well put together. The rules are available online, and I've read them through, and I get a real good sense that this game is going to be, the scoring mechanics are different for different things, meaning each of the categories that you're going to be trying to build up in, and it looks like a game that is really going to be deep. Doesn't look like it's going to be that hard to get started, but I think it's got a lot of hidden complexity in it. So that is one that I'm really looking forward to. I can't wait till it comes over. So that's Prosperity, that one I'm really looking forward to.
Another game that's being previewed at Spiel, you had mentioned it last episode, was Tashkalar. Just a little side note about Tashkalar, Arena of Legends. There is a contest going on at BGG that ends October 17th, soon, where you go in. It's this typical BGG contest, but you can win a copy of the game. So if you answer some questions, you might be able to win a copy of it. So yeah, as soon as you listen to this, if you're interested in getting a copy of it, go put in an entry at BGG.
Yeah. I think Tashkalar is one that is really high on my list too.
Yeah, I'd like to see it.
Yeah, I want to get that one for sure.
It's by CGE.
Yeah, it is. And then another interesting Essen release that has really, for some reason, captured my attention is a game called Steam Park. It's by a lot of Italian guys. Aurelio Buefino, Lorenzo Silva, Lorenzo Sorrentino.
There's a bunch of Italian guys right now going, that guy slaughtered my name!
Yeah, I'm sure there are. It's going to sell for about $40 to $50. It's a yellow game, and so it's definitely coming over. It's got, for me, if Zuloretto, if you're familiar with Zuloretto, it looks like a modification upon that game. There's a board that you have, and you have these three-dimensional, crazy-looking amusement park rides. They're just these wild-looking rides. The artwork, I think, is by the same person that does Dixit, so it's got that sort of sensibility to it. And what you do is you roll your die, and you can lock up certain of your die in order to be able to do certain things. Spend money to build stuff, get rid of waste, because when people come, you get waste, to draw people out of the bag in order to ride your rides, but you got to build up your park first, and you have to put the piece. Their rides have different colors, so they're in sets,
mm-hmm.
and you put them on the board. There are 3, 4, 2-person rides, 1-person rides, and you put them on the board, and they have to be aligned within the space that you have available. And then you also have to connect other rides that have the same color to the rides of that color. Okay, so you're building this sort of maze puzzle on the board. And then you're also getting these people tiles of different colors. You put them into a bag, and then you pull them out, and you place them on the various different rides. And, of course, that's how you score at the end of the game. There's a lot more to it than that. Well, not a lot more, but there's more to it than that. And it just sounds like a really neat, fun family game. The rules look very simple, and it looks neat for us to get to table. I want to get it. I think my kids will enjoy it, and I'm looking forward to seeing that one come around.
One other note, we finally, I've purchased a copy of Lost Legends.
Yes.
So we're going to get that to the table to review at 1.2. It took a little while to come out. I'm super excited about it by right. Queen Games. So definitely when we get that, we'll get it to the table and review it.
Yeah, I think that'll be a great one. That's another one that's actually going to be highlighted at Essen. Obviously, it's already been out at Gen Con. It's available here in the U.S. If you're interested, you know, check out our review. We think this is going to be a really cool game.
Review to come, yeah.
Yeah, review to come. All right, well, I tell you what. Why don't we roll over to our walkthrough for Devonair, and then we'll see what the other pegs think of this interesting deduction game.
You're listening to Blue Peg, Pink Peg, a proud member of the Dice Tower Network.
Devonair, produced by Asmodee Games, came out in 2012 and is designed by Brett Gilbert. It plays 2 to 4 players. It plays in 30 minutes and plays 13 and up, but I think younger could probably play this game. Now, in my rules, I'm not going to give you the full set of rules. If you're anything like me, you'll probably forget hearing them anyway, but I'm just going to give you enough that gives you a good feel for the game. Now, there are different sets of rules for 2, 3, and 4 players. I'm just going to tell you the rules for the 4-player game. The game comes with 4 colored game boards, blue, red, yellow, and green, 36 matching colored cards, 4 prediction tokens for each player, and score tokens. In this game, players play the part of mediums who attempt to divine the cards owned by their opponents. In each round, the cards revealed little by little, which gives the mediums the possibility of narrowing down their predictions. A good guess allows players to win points. The player with the most points after 4 rounds wins. Now, during the start of every round, the first player gets rotated clockwise around. As I mentioned, there are 36 color cards in the game. The breakdown is 6 red, 8 blue, 10 green, and 12 yellow cards. Now, there's nothing on these cards. The only thing that's important is the color. These cards are shuffled up, and each player is given 6 cards. So out of 36 cards, only 24 are in play in any specific round. In a round, you're trying to guess how many of each color are in that round. On each colored board, the space is noted for a guess. For example, there are only a possibility of 8 blue cards that could possibly be in a round. On the blue board, there's a space for a 2-3 guess, a 4 guess, a 5 guess, and so on. On your first turn, you are given 6 cards in your hand. After looking at those 6 cards, you then pass 3. So at this point in the round, you've already seen 9 cards that are going to be in that round. During your turn, you choose 1 color card from your hand and play it next to the corresponding board. For example, you take out a blue card from your hand and you put it next to the blue board. Once you do that, you get to guess on that blue board how many blue cards you think are going to be in this particular round by placing your player token on the number of your prediction. The trick is, though, the guess has to be in an unoccupied space. So if someone before you has already guessed number 5 on the blue board, you cannot guess 5 until their token has been removed. When you play a color card during your turn, you have to move your token on that board, which means you might have to move your token off a guess that you actually think it is. You also have the option, however, to place your token on the no guess section of the board. So you play like this, making guesses on boards with cards out of your hand until you get down to four cards, at which point you have to pass two more. You also do the same when you get down to two cards, passing one card. All the cards in your hand must be played, which means at the end of the game, you will be forced to play those last two cards, making predictions with those last two cards. After all the cards are played, you score. Whoever makes the correct prediction on any color board gets 3 points. The guess one above or below the correct answer gets 1 point. All other guesses, however, gets minus 1 point. If your token was on the no guess section of the board, you get nothing. Now, there are several ways to get some bonus points, but that is essentially the meat of the game. You are trying to guess the amount of color cards in a round. As the round progresses and your opponents play their cards, you slowly learn more about the final amount of cards that are going to be in the round. Also, hand management is key here. You cannot make a guess on a board unless you have that matching color card. So you should be asking yourself these questions when you're playing. When do you make a guess with a color card? What cards are you going to pass to your opponent? What cards do you think your opponent is going to pass to you? This game truly is a game of prestidigitation. Now, let's get back to the pegs and see what they thought of Devonair.
Well, because you have sex with your eyes closed. You're scared to death, Mama.
Oh, man, you have hit the nail on the head perfectly.
What question would you ask me in your free tarot reading?
Miss Cleo, you are the best.
All right, everybody. So let's meet the pink pegs. Christina?
Hey.
Hey. And honey, Carrie, hey. How are you?
Great. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. So what do we think of Devonair?
Ooh.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, it's a fun little game. What about you, Rob?
I did like it. There's a lot more strategy there to the game than I thought there were going to be.
Right. I agree. I mean, I think the fact is that it's a deduction game, and you can really employ a lot of tactics in order to figure out, first of all, what your guess is going to be early on.
Right.
But also leaving yourself space to be able to determine, you know, where am I going to go next? Because I'm not going to end up where I start out 9 times out of 10. And also, how can I utilize my cards so that I can get somebody off the spaces that I need?
Yeah, for me, that was a big deal. It was more so than I thought it was going to be, is the card management. Not only are you trying to figure out what card you want to give the person next to you to force them to go or pass that card, but then you're trying to figure out what the person next to you is going to pass you based on what they're guessing. You should assume, okay, well, if they're guessing that, for instance, the yellow, if they're saying, oh, there's going to be 8, that means they got a handful of yellow. They're getting ready to pass you. You need to be ready for some yellow cards.
Yeah.
Well, I think, too, is that you have to pay attention to, like, okay, I'm passing 3 yellow cards to my right, and I have to remember that's what I passed.
Yeah.
Someone else is passing me, and then you have to remember what you passed them. So you have to pay attention. I think in the beginning, like the first 2 or 3 times I played this, I was just like, okay, I'm guessing.
Right.
Like it's a guess. Like I'm guessing.
Right.
And hoping it and works out well for me. But it didn't, because I only scored 3 points in this game.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I got a real knack for this game, I got to tell you.
Not really.
I utilize my logical skills. Well, let's talk a little bit about the components of this game. I mean,
really,
I have some thoughts on
that. Yeah, they're really thick pieces.
Yeah.
I mean, the cards were good stock. The art, I liked my art guy in particular. He was like a shaman
immense.
With this incredible beard.
Yes.
I was digging the beard.
Yeah, I did like the characters of the choices of characters that you could play. And if you, in the rule book, they have like story.
Oh, really?
Backstories behind all of the characters.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And so what I kind of looked at it was, is like, oh, it's kind of like the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, but for mediums.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's
yeah.
like, what tool do they use? You know, you had the glass ball, you had the teacup.
Yeah.
And then
you had like some sort of occultist sort of thing.
Yeah.
Ouija board. Something like that.
Yeah. I thought the art was really nice, and I thought it really lent itself to the theme.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the theme of predicting something is, it feels pasted on right away,
right.
you know,
yeah.
when you first start playing. But then you look at the art, you look at the cards, and you kind of think about how this is working, and sort of the conceit is that they're all gathering together for this competition, you know, to predict this thing. And when you start sort of playing that in the context of this game, which is a prediction game, you really sort of can immerse yourself in that theme, because the art is it's gorgeous. I mean, it's lovely, lovely art.
There's not a lot of it.
Though. No, there no, are a lot of components. Yeah. No, but they're really nice and they're well balanced.
Oh, I like the art because it looks like the old tarot decks that we used to do in college and post college, and then tattoos. Like I just felt like I was back in Asheville, and I could have been at that tattoo gallery we went in.
Yeah, and gotten that put on your ankle. Mm-hmm. As the case may be. Mm. I'll say one thing, one kind of drawback on it is that the card colors, while the yellow, they're so muted.
Yeah, they're not primary.
Yeah. And if you had any kind of color blindness issue, it would be very difficult. Now, that said, the images on each card, the yellow card's different than the black card, which is different than the red.
Yeah, and there's writing at the bottom. Do those correspond to the
colors or the numbers?
Do they correspond to the mats?
Yeah, they do. They do.
The images do?
They do.
The yellow was the sky. I seem to always have yellow.
Yeah. They loosely correspond.
Okay.
Yeah, what were you saying, hon?
Oh, just that all the writing on the bottom of the card is the same.
Yeah. So I did like that part of it. And I thought the art was nice. I thought the layout was good.
Yeah. I like the rule book, or I should say rule books. Rule books were five different versions, languages.
Oh, yeah.
And each rule book was printed in a different language.
Yeah, so that's an Asmodee thing. They love to throw a bunch of rule books into their games.
Yeah, but that's great. It's hitting all populations. There's no reason why anyone can't buy this game and be like, I don't know how to play.
Well, because Asmodee actually originates out of France, so these games all get premiered for the most part at Spiel Essen, which is coming up in October, and then it they later come to the United States, so that's a part of why that is, but so they're good books.
How do you guys feel about the price on Cool Stuff right now? You could pick this game up for a little bit over $20, 20 and some change.
I think,
is that reasonably priced?
I would have bought it today.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved it when I played it.
Yeah. I think
it's
worth that.
I thought it would be
that.
A really fun game to have.
Yeah.
And it's got variants for two players and three players, which all seemed pretty interesting. We haven't played a two player. Patrick, did you try it for two players? Or?
I gave it a little play with two players. Carrie and I played it with two players. And the way that works is you actually take four of the cards that each person picks two, and you put them in the middle, and that will change at the end of the game. Then you move based upon those cards. So there's another little element of sort of you have to anticipate, what did I put? What do I think they put? So where do I think the numbers are going to end up? So as opposed to like a dummy hand, there's sort of like this final component there. And I thought that was a very elegant way to deal with a two-player game. Mm. It plays well with two. I got to say, it hits its sweet four. Yeah, it hits its sweet spot with four.
Okay.
But it works with two.
Is it more challenging, did you feel, with two?
I thought that it was equally challenging, but it was a little bit on the guessy side. There was a little bit of too much guessing that went into it. You couldn't predict as much because you're dealing with sort of this random thing. Again, you know what you put down, but you don't know what your opponent put down, and so it's harder to anticipate that.
How do you feel the replayability for the game is?
I think it's on the low end.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I think that probably the one place where this game may suffer a little bit is replayability.
Yeah.
Now, the upside of that is that because you're not using you've got a kitty, so you're not using every card.
Right.
You know, so that random factor will change the nature of the game each play. And then the people that you're playing with, I think being able to figure out their methods and the ways that they play increases that replayability.
Yeah, I just think they're like with, you know, when you play the yellow cards, you know that there's 11 to 12.
Right.
And, you know, when we played, on average, it was between 7, 8, or 9 every time.
Yeah.
And so if you want to just kind of bank for the hope that you're going to get 3 or 1 point, then you might just shoot for it.
Right. What do you think?
Always put it on 9.
What about replayability? You think this will replay well?
I think it would play pretty well. I think you would want to change out the people you played with.
Yeah,
like, I think it'd be really fun for us to play more than two or three times.
Yeah.
At least not in
rapid
succession.
Bringing it to gatherings or different things like that could be really fun.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that it would be fun to play, you know, several times in a night
right.
or a filler game as you're waiting for someone to show up. But it's not one of those things that I want to play all the time.
No. Yeah, no, no, no. I will
it's
say
very
this.
Compact. It's very compact, so this is one of those things that you could take different places with you right. to kill
which,
time.
Yeah. Which I think adds to it, because you kind of allude to this, honey. Accessibility. This is a game that is really easy for, I think, people to get into. You can teach it really quick, so people can learn it very effectively.
I actually got a question for Carrie. In past reviews, Carrie has mentioned that she likes a game that you can talk and have fun with while we're playing.
Yeah.
When we played the practice hand, everybody was all chatty time. Oh, this is a lot of fun. But then we played it for real. Dead silence. Everybody's
it was
thinking.
Really quiet. It was so quiet.
I didn't know if that affected your view of the game at all.
I actually liked it because I was trying to figure out, like, okay. And then when I finally clicked, I was like, oh my God, I can really screw Patrick on this and I will get all the points.
You killed me. Yeah. What she did was she took a card that she knew I didn't want, a color she knew I didn't want.
But I knew there were only five purple or
five
green.
Right. Yeah, I was locked in on the one that was the best.
The right one.
And she was like, I'm going to kill him. And I had to move off of that. And I ended up having to go into the nowhere zone so that I wouldn't end up being losing
points. Just watching his face when I passed him the card was great.
Very appealing. Yeah, and I think that as a general rule, the social interaction on this game is nice, even though there's not a lot of talky talk, because you're seeing, oh man, you totally screwed me over,
right.
or you're so stuck. I know that you're stuck, and you can engage with each other on that level.
Yeah, and I do think that there are ways to vary the game. We didn't use the bonus spaces, so that's a possibility to make the game a little different. Maybe the scoring would have affected people differently, so you can utilize the bonus spaces or not, which can make it more challenging.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the challenge on this game is pretty high, but it can be. It's things like you can think it out. You can math it out. Not math it out per se, but you can figure out a technique and figure out the people at the table and anticipate.
Well, let's go ahead and rate the game.
Let
me explain the Blue Peg, Pink Peg rating system. As in the game of life, you have a car with six pegs.
Yeah.
If you rate this game a six, that means this game is rocking. A car with zero pegs, you don't even want to get close to this game.
Yes.
So let's go ahead and rate Carrie. Let's start with you. What is your Blue Peg, Pink Peg rating for this game?
I think this game for me would be a four.
So
close
four
to a five. I was kind of thinking it would be five, but the replayability or lack of kind of changes it.
Yeah.
But I think for the price point, it's a great four pegs.
Yeah.
What about you, Patrick?
I'm going to agree with Carrie. I think four pegs is about where this one lives.
Mm.
It's a fun game. It's a light game. It's a game that I would love to have in my collection. You know, you guys own it, but I think we might add it to our collection because it will be a fun one to pull out with family.
Mm-hmm.
It's a quick playing game, but I kind of agree with Carrie. I think replayability might be an issue. I think it's one that you'll play a lot because you'll play it with different groups of people, and I think it's a good little way of getting people into a game that they can understand quickly. Is it one that I'm going to play with great regularity with my gaming group? Probably not. And so that is its four peg rating for me.
Okay. Right. Christina?
I'm going to give it a three peg.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give it a three peg because I like that social, that high energy social interaction of games.
Right.
And so, like we said, we didn't talk much.
Yeah, this lacks that.
And I'm not one that counts cards or things like that.
Right.
So I didn't play very well because I lost. But my brain just doesn't gravitate towards those really strategy thinking ahead games. So I'll give it a solid three peg.
Okay.
I'm going to also give it a three. Replayability is big for me.
Yeah.
I've got to have a game that it plays differently almost every time. And this game does. You have the, you know, you don't know what cards are going to be in play in a particular game. It's just every game is the same. I need a couple more layers to keep me interested. That being said, it's a good game if we're waiting for someone or if we're at a bar or something. We're just trying to kill a little
Very
bit of
compact.
Time.
Yeah.
So it's a fun game, just not something that's going to have me coming back a lot.
I do want to say one thing. I think this is a perfect in-law game.
Yeah.
I really do.
I would agree.
Because it's easy to learn, and I think my parents would really enjoy it. And so that's, if you're looking for something to fit that niche.
Light.
Yeah, it's cheap.
Yeah, like beach
you'll probably
trips,
get good value.
Like, friend vacations that you all meet like once a year, but you don't know each other that well all the time.
Right.
All right. So to sum up, Carrie gives it a four. Patrick gives it a four. Christina gives it a three.
Mm-hmm.
And I give it a three.
Yeah.
So next up, let's review Escape, the Curse of the Temple.
Oh, Escape the Curse of the Temple is a 2012 real-time cooperative game designed by Christian Admundsen Ostby and published by Queen Games, where each of the players assume the role of a members of a team of adventurers seeking to find a set number of gems from within a crumbling temple before time runs out, and they are all buried alive. Players do this by rolling sets of 5 dice while a 10-minute moody soundtrack plays that both count down the player's impending doom and also sets out certain tasks that all of the players must complete or suffer the consequences. Now, as the game begins, each of the players place an adventurer meeple of their color choice together in a central starting room located within the heart of the temple. Now, adjacent to this room are 2 side chambers. Now, at the entrance of these chambers are 2 icons. These icons represent the dice combination that each player must roll in order to enter the room. Now, each of the players roll their 5 dice simultaneously in order to roll the appropriate combination. The players may lock any of their die and roll only the remaining dice in order to roll the required combination. For example, if a tile shows a green running man and a red torch at its entrance, then a player must roll those 2 dice or die in order to enter the room. Now, if a player rolls a green running man but not a red torch, he may lock the green running man die and roll the remaining 4 dice in order to get the red torch. Now, each player keeps rolling until they get the required combination. However, if a player rolls a black mask die, then that die is lost and may not be rolled again until it is unlocked by the roll of a golden mask die, with each golden mask rolled unlocking 2 black mask dice. However, the players may also roll dice combinations to find gems, explore other rooms, break curses, or open treasures. Now, if a player is in a room that has a gem tile, they must roll the appropriate dice combination in order to find that gem, which is then moved from a stock of gems that are preset at the start of the game to the tile in which a gem was found. If a player wants to explore a new room, they must roll the appropriate combination of dice, usually 2 green running men, and then take a tile from a stack in the center of the table, turn it over, and place it in a location of their choosing adjacent to the room in which they are currently located. Now, if the room has a curse on it, the player draws a curse tile and must suffer the condition that the curse requires. For example, loss of a die, or loss of the ability to speak, or the requirement of raising a hand above their head until the required dice combination is rolled in order to break the curse. Now, if the player is in a room with a treasure chest, they may unlock the treasure chest by rolling the appropriate combination of dice. Now, if they unlock the treasure chest, they then take the tile into their stores, and that tile gives them a special power that they can save to use later in the game. Now, play goes on like this for several minutes, with each adventurer moving their meeples further and further into the temple until a gong sounds on the soundtrack that's running through gameplay. Now, at that time, all players must roll dice combinations in order to move room by room by room back into the center of the temple before the gong tolls again. Any player that does not make it back in time loses one of their die for the remainder of the game. This challenge presents itself twice during the game. Now, during this challenge, the mad dash that gets you back to the central tile often requires players to pool their rolls in order to speed through the temple. Now, in order to pool rolls, 2 adventurers must be in the same room. Now, this can also be done, and sometimes must be done, during other parts of the game in order to break curses, unlock black mask die, find gems, and unlock treasures. Now, play continues like this until an exit tile that is located near the bottom of the tile deck is found. At that point, all players must rush to the exit, and then they have to roll a certain combination of die in order to exit. There, they must roll blue key dice equal to the number of unfound gems that remain in the preset store of gems that was set out at the beginning of the game. So, the more gems that are found throughout the game, the easier it is to get out of the temple at the very end. Now, very often, many adventurers will need to pull their rolls for one person to escape the temple. Once one member escapes, they may give one of their die to one other player that remains within the temple. However, they may no longer help the remaining adventurers by pulling their rolls. Now, when the last person has made a roll that allows them to escape the temple, the adventurers escape the temple and win. However, if the 10-minute-long soundtrack reaches its conclusion before every single adventurer is out of the temple, the curse has prevailed, and all of the adventurers must spend eternity within the temple's rotting walls. So, that is the gameplay of Escape, the Curse of the Temple. Quick, hectic, tense, and a whole lot of fun. But let's get back to the table and see what all the pegs thought of Escape, the Curse of the Temple.
That was the Whoosies and Whatsies, and now let's talk about what we thought about Escape, the Curse of the Temple.
Yeah.
First of all, what's a Whoosie and Whatsie?
You know, honey. You know.
So I'll give some of my initial thoughts in regards to this game. I love it. And a lot of that derives from the fact that this is probably a top play game in our family. The kids love to play it. Mm. They love to teach it. They just will play it many, many times in rapid succession. If we don't beat it, they want to get right back into it. They just love this game. So that's a big part of what I like about it. I'll get more into the details of what I like about it. But that, just as a family play game, this one is a winner.
Can you do two players with this game?
I don't know. I've never tried it with
We've
two players.
Three and
oh, yeah.
Four.
No, actually, you can play it with two. You can actually play it solo. And I've played
it. One to five players.
Yeah, I've played this game solo myself many times. And when I was first learning to play it, and it's really, it's fun to play by yourself.
That's what she said.
But I think it's important to know that you can play it over and over again because it's only 10 minutes. There's a disc that's running that you have to be done in 10 minutes, so it's short.
Right.
That was my favorite part of the whole thing was the audio track.
The soundtrack?
It's like a race. 4D. It gongs.
Right, it gongs, and then Patrick yells at everybody, okay, we gotta get back! Everybody get back, or you're gonna lose the dice!
Okay, I'm gonna say, when Patrick was explaining the rules, he said, this game is simple as silk. Yeah. And then chaos and mayhem ensued. And I was like, this is not simple!
People are screaming, running around the table.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I played
Patrick's arms over his head.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the components to start. It's got, the very simple tiles.
Yeah.
The little Chits gemstones. And then the dice. But, you get a lot, for the price on this. It's in the $30 range.
Now, you said we played with the expansion, right?
We did. The expansion comes with the base game.
Mm-hmm.
But when you first play it a few times, when you're first getting into it, you probably want to play without the expansion, because what the base expansion does is it adds curses and it adds treasures. And it makes it a lot more difficult to play with those curses, because those curses come out like crazy.
Yep.
And there are a lot less opportunities to actually get rid of your gemstones, so you're going to have to be exploring a lot more aggressively when you're playing with the mm-hmm. expansion. But I really do enjoy the expansion. I unless I'm playing with beginners, I try to play with the expansion about all the time.
Yeah. I liked the collaborativeness of the game, is that it's mm-hmm. so high anxiety,
uh-huh.
but you still have to be paying attention to helping your fellow gamers. Yeah. And if you don't, you all lose.
Yeah.
And someone ends up yelling at you profusely for the rest of the night because you're not helping them unlock their die.
Yeah. Well, it is funny.
I need some help. Someone give me a go.
Here I come.
Yeah, I got to tell you, when we played the last time, when we all played together just recently, Carrie was locking her die up nonstop.
Every roll. I actually checked them to make sure they weren't black on all sides. I got some kind of messed up dice that was going to just make me the sour person on the board.
Yeah, okay, I go home Carrie again.
Yeah. Yeah. Unlock me.
Yeah, you were just this incompetent explorer. You were short stuff.
One of the curses is you can't talk.
Yeah.
And so Christina keeps hitting the table looking at me. And I'm like, use your words. Talk to me.
And she like points to
She's pointing at his curse.
Yeah.
I just realized that's why you were hitting the table. I thought you were just really excited.
Yeah.
Well, she could have been. I don't know.
I mean, I will say that like if you have any like high blood pressure or anything like that, you probably shouldn't play this game. It is a high stressful anxiety game. I mean, granted, it's only 10 minutes.
I got beef with this game.
You got some beef?
Yeah. Okay, first of all, and maybe this was just how we set the game up.
Right.
We set up the tiles in the middle, the first three tiles that you play with. Mm-hmm. And then it expands out depending on what you grab.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, but you then you have the curses and the additional tiles that you grab off to the side somewhere.
Right.
So we don't know where the actual temple is going to grow.
Right.
So we have this pile of tiles.
Right.
Oh. So now we're reaching over to grab a tile. I can't see what's going on because your hand's over mine. And at one point, which has nothing to do with the gameplay, but Christina, her sleeve knocked over my little guy and it went like to another room. So now I got to stop rolling my die to find out where my little guy is. And it was just crazy. It's all the placement. Like,
I guess you could divide.
Yeah,
them.
I think maybe
just, like,
in the future.
That
yeah, that's not a bad idea. Split it in half. You know, put one on one side, one on the other. That might be helpful. The reason that I don't do that is because you don't know where the temple's going to expand. You know, like suddenly, like you got this long, long temple that's running out the side of the table, and you're like, I don't have any room on the table.
Right.
So I guess that's what I did. You know, I'll say one thing in regards to, you know, I think the components are solid, but it is, you got to have a lot of space.
Yeah.
You know, because they're pretty big
tiles.
Well,
you have a giant table. Yeah. I just feel like that we set up the cards or whatever too close to the starting temple.
We should have strategized.
And we also sat at one end this time. Normally we sit like you two on one side and us on one side.
Right, give yourself some space. So the point is, when you're playing this game, you might want to do a little space alignment, you know,
kind
of scout out the space.
Be aware of your surroundings.
And set it up. You know, I'll say this. I read the instructions on this, and they're super simple to read. And that may be why I'm saying smooth as silk. Because the rules, the play is chaotic, but the rules are really simple.
Yeah.
Roll your die and go. Roll your die and go.
And this is what happens.
Yeah. And the setup on this is pretty simple. You know, you got to get your cart, your stuff set up your curses, set up your treasures, and then take, you know, your exit one, shuffle that into the bottom, and then you're good to go. And, and the one gripe I will say about this is that it uses a CD. Now, in America, people often don't have CD players.
What? You're a snob.
No, I'm not a snob. I just, you know, it's kind of anachronistic. I mean, the fact is we use our phone, you know, and I think a lot of people can, and you can do that, but, you know, it's just kind of, it's one thing about it. It doesn't tweak me, but it's like, they have the files and stuff, you know, you can download, but it just is an odd feature.
You got to have something in there because that's a component of the game, the soundtrack.
I like the soundtrack.
You don't want to put in the rule book, okay, now go online and download an MP3. You've got to put it in there somewhere.
No, I get that. And one other thing about the CD that I'm going to say is a gripe. They need to make those gongs
a lot
more prominent.
Yeah.
Because I for every time we played, and when I play with beginners, I have to tell people, because I know what to listen for, I have to tell people, that was a gong. We got to go.
Right.
You know?
That's a good point.
But one other thing I want to say about it is that it's kind of creepy sounding. So when I first played with my kids, they were like, my son would hover kind of around the door before we'd start playing. He was a little scared about the whole thing. But yeah, I mean, it's a neat feature of it. It's just kind of an odd thing about
it. There are
a
lot of pieces to this game.
There are a lot of pieces.
A lot of pieces.
But it's a good value, you know? I mean, as I said, you can get it for the mid-30s, which isn't a bad price for this game. And the dice are super neat, you know? I mean, all those dice. I like a game with a lot of dice. It just makes me happy.
Yeah, and the images are really easy, and the icons are concise.
Yeah.
The only thing I think we struggled with was on, you know, the times when we played was exiting the temple.
Yes.
You know, we always forgot to give a die back or let the other person keep a die.
Yeah,
right,
like,
right.
Do we
maybe
both
the
get
second
out?
Or
third
does one
time.
Person get out?
Right. And it is something that with the repeated plays, you'll get better at.
Yeah.
I mean, I've played this a score of times, I think, probably 20 times or more. And, you know, it's very intuitive for me and very natural for me. But I can see where that would be difficult during early plays. What about the social elements in this game? I mean, it kind of...
It's totally
what
there was
social.
A lot of screaming.
Yes,
there was a lot. There was a like, I need some keys! Someone give me a golden idol! I need help!
I think this would be a great game to play with your spouse when you guys are like, when you're in an argument about something. You know what? let's just play Escape for 10 minutes where you can literally yell at can yell at one another.
Oh my God.
In the concept of the game, and then you're the stress is all gone.
Yeah, and
from
then
your
you're
body.
Laughing at the end of it. It's a great therapeutic tool.
Honey, I need a golden idol. Why don't you do the dishes? Wait, what?
I will give it to you now.
I think you're right. I think this is a nice little therapeutic game.
Yeah, I really think so.
Because you're working cooperatively. There's no alpha gamer in this game.
No.
You know, because everybody's just rolling die. But the thing about it is, the hilarious thing about it is, I remember there was one time, I think it was Carrie, was like a million miles away from anybody.
I was so far away.
She was like in her own part of the temple, and the gong went, and we're like, you're so screwed.
You know what happened on that one round particularly? I was like, okay, I'm just going to glob onto them, and I'm never going to leave them. And all of a sudden, I was blocking myself out with black dice. And you guys were all gone. Yeah. I was trying so hard to just follow, and I was like, all right, I'll just be one square.
And we left her behind. Poor little short stuff.
The game happened.
Yeah. I mean, the game does take control of you, and there's so many times in the context of the game where you're like, you're just rolling those dice like crazy, and you're like, where am I?
It's a very loud game.
What's going on?
Yeah, we woke up our daughter, and then she just came in and ate cereal till we were done.
Yeah.
You
can't play this in a coffee shop.
No.
Only if you want to be hated.
Yeah, this is a home game. It plays up to five. I've played with five, and it's crazy with that number. Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy. Well, I tell you what, we've talked a lot about this game, some things we like about it. Why don't we go ahead and give it a rating on the Blue Peg, Pink Peg rating system. Christina, what are your thoughts?
I'm going to give it a 5 pegs.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. I like this game. I liked that it had an audio component to it. That's something new that I haven't seen a lot of. And I liked that it's a collaborative kind of mayhem.
Yeah.
Chaotic game that for me I felt really relieved after I played that game. I got some yelling out. No one got mad at me that I was yelling. It was good. I felt good about it. So 5 pegs for me.
All right,
well, excellent. What about you, Rob?
I'm going to give it a 2.
What?
Wow. Yeah. I did,
really?
I did not like the game.
He gets stressed out really easily.
Well, it's not stressed out. Here's my problem. I did get stressed out.
Yeah.
I didn't enjoy the co-op aspect of it. And again, if you listen to me enough, you'll know that I'm not a big co-op fan. I just didn't like it. And it was another thing is like, I couldn't watch other people play. Uh-huh. Like, I just assume that you rolled whatever it is that you were trying to roll. It's like you're playing a solo game.
Right.
And you have help from other people sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. I can see that.
And I do like to socialize. And there was social interacting as we're asking. We're playing a game. It's not social so much as I need this. Can you help me do that? I just have no desire to play this game again.
Okay.
How, that being said, it got a 2 because I can see how this would be great with families, with kids. Kids would eat this up. And you said earlier, kids love this game.
They do love it.
So, you know, if you're a family, you're looking for a game for kids, this would be perfect for you. It's just not perfect for me.
Gotcha. Boo. What about you, honey?
Well, that's funny because I was going to go with a 3. And then after Christina reviewed it, I was like, you know, those were fun elements of that. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So I think I'm going to go with a 4.
Okay.
All over the place.
Yeah. And I didn't actually really like it. The first couple of times I played with our family, the chaos got kind of on my nerves.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But this time I really enjoyed it. And maybe it was because I was playing with adults and not kids.
Yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I thought it was really fun.
Yeah. Well, I'll say I'm going to give it 5 pegs. The family play is just such a joy for me. I really enjoy that component. I think this is a really innovative game, and I've got to give it a lot of props for that. I really enjoy a game that does something that nothing else in my collection does.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to find something that fills the same niche as this game. I love the tension of it. I read somewhere somebody was talking about relaxing games, and they said that Escape was their most relaxing game.
What?
And I was like, what's wrong with you?
Maybe when they had cathartic afterwards.
Yeah, and I mean, it is. There is that component of it. It does have that sort of, you know, your idea for therapy.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
Yeah.
You know, I just enjoy this game. It is light as a feather, and I like that about it. You know, I just think it's so much fun. So I really think this is a solid 5 for me. 5 pegs. So we've got a total rating of 5 from Christina, 2 from Rob, 4 from Carrie, and a solid 5 from me. So that's our review of Escape Curse from the Temple. So let's go on and let's talk about our topic for this week. What themes we love, hate, and what do we think about theme generally?
I remember when we broke up the first time, saying this is it, I've had enough. Cause like we hadn't seen each other in a month when you said you needed space.
All right, everybody, let's talk about themes.
Yeah.
Themes we like, themes we don't like, themes we hate to see in games. What do you guys think?
Oh, where do we start?
Yeah. Yeah, you're not a big fan of themes.
You know what? And what really deters me off the start, and everybody knows this, is the box.
Yeah.
You are so superficial.
I know. Like, should all come in a plastic bag. Covered the box.
Sometimes when I bring new games into the house, I just want to cover it with like a plastic grocery bag so she can't see the theme.
Yeah.
Or maybe get some like construction paper and just cover it up. What's this game about? Oh, I don't know.
It's got the tiles. Okay, I'll play. It's got wizards. I'm out.
Yeah.
Oh my God. There's so much wizard hate coming from Christina.
I know. Christina, you do hate wizards.
I do. And I think I would be, if you presented as a wizard, I'd be like, not really. Oh, what about mages? Definitely not. What about people with hats who do magic? Are they pointy hats?
Illusionist.
I feel like I want to explore this wizard hate with you. Why do you hate wizards?
I feel like, and this is going to be totally, it's going to come across bad.
Okay.
I apologize. But I don't think that kind of a character in a game is a strong character.
What are you talking about? Gandalf? I know. God!
Rob is about to, his head may explode like in Scanner.
How are wizards not strong characters?
I know. That's
Fireball! Okay. Fireball!
You know what it is? She watched that Dungeons & Dragons Saturday morning cartoon too often where the geeky kid was the wizard.
No.
You know?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, B, I hate categorizing things.
I don't know what it is. I know that's not true to be said about that type of character. I know they have a lot of spells and
so you're okay with swords?
Yes. And someone with armor and
what about
so
a
knights?
Bow?
Knights yeah, are good.
What about a bow
good.
And arrow?
Yeah, I'm good Indians, with anything with great. A weapon, but if you have a staff.
What if he's crippled?
I think we've lost the thread of this conversation. Getting back to theme.
That is a theme I don't like.
You do there not you like go. Wizard themes,
okay,
that's for sure.
I love fantasy.
I'm just going to respond to that. That's my least favorite thing.
And it's my least favorite. There's something about it from growing up, I think, that just makes me... It's that maybe the Dungeons & Dragons, I didn't have a lot of friends who played it.
Right.
I didn't have any friends who played it.
Right. I mean, I played D&D.
And that reminds me of that.
And I like RPGs, and I don't mind a fantasy RPG, and I love fantasy literature. I mean, I really, really do. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Game of Thrones, but it's Swords of Shannara, all the others. But for whatever reason, in a board game, it just doesn't hold much appeal for me.
I just don't know you guys anymore.
Wait.
If on a box I see a dude with a sword and a dragon, I'm already interested. Like, I want to play it.
No, I think maybe it's because that theme is so spent out.
Right.
Like it's
done.
It's overdone.
It's a Taylor Swift of board games.
She's like, going to write a song about you for saying that.
Zynga!
Okay, in that line of thinking about being overdone, if you know anything about me, okay, October, we're in October now, and we do this thing, Christina and I, it's every year we do horror movie month where we watch horror movies the entire time. I love horror movies. Yeah. I love zombies to death.
Right.
Or undeath. I'm sorry.
I can't stand
zombies.
All right, Tina.
I can't stand zombies in a game. I have not found one game that I've enjoyed zombies in. You got Zombicide.
Yeah.
You've got, what was that one? The tile, the zombies.
City of Horror.
I hate it with a passion.
Night on Earth.
What about Zombie Flux?
Yeah.
Did you like that? Yeah.
Zombie Flux. Okay.
By the way, I love City of Horror. Love it.
Anyway, but my point is now when I hear, especially on Kickstarter, zombie this, zombie that, we got a new zombie game coming out, I'm like, automatically, I just don't care.
Yeah, I mean, people think it's that hot topic that they think will sell. Like,
right.
That's popular.
I mean, all the shows are zombies.
So I'm going to put a game out like
that. Right, right. I'm not a fan of the zombie theme as a general rule either. That said, I mean, I like Last Night on Earth okay. I really like City of Horror, but like Zombicide, Not a fan. It just isn't for me. They all feel, it seems like it's hard in the zombie theme to explore an interesting or unique mechanic, because every zombie theme, the premise of zombies is bunch of small, weaker characters coming at you. You know, and it's just like they all feel like they're a retread of the prior game.
Now, is there a zombie game out there that the zombie, everybody plays zombies and they're trying to kill the humans?
There's one coming out, I think at Essen, that is, I believe you are a zombie. But that's the only one I can think of. That where you take on the role of a zombie, though it's an interesting take on the zombie thing. But
they should make a movie like
Zombie
that
Wizard.
Too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they actually have made a movie. It's called Warm Bodies.
Smash Up. Ooh.
Yeah. But in any event, yeah, zombie theme, not one of my favorites either. I will tell you guys a theme I love. I can't think of, and I didn't think I would like it that much. Science fiction.
Hmm?
I think science fiction games.
What games are science fiction?
Merchant
Name
of
some.
Venus, Cosmic Encounters. Yeah.
Oh, I like those too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, they're just—it's for whatever reason.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of diversity. You can deal with a lot of different races, powers. You can set up your own world making in that I think is unique.
Yeah,
I mean,
you can have a civilization where you're building a civilization, or you can have some sort of trading, or you can have warring factions. It's endless almost what you could do.
Yeah,
I agree. You know, it's funny because I never thought of that as science fiction, because I do not like science fiction literature. I don't like anything science fiction, and those are some of my favorite games.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm really glad you didn't say, oh, it's a sci-fi game.
Yeah, yeah,
because
yeah.
Because I'd be like you with the Wizard.
I turned off on it. Yeah,
yeah, I don't even want to play it.
Now, you historically,
like
you
them.
Like sci-fi games, and I don't know what it is. I think it's because science fiction is so much more diverse than, say, fantasy. Fantasy is so based in so many cliches.
Yeah,
you know,
and they're
all
resource
the archetypes
games, too. Lots of those sci-fi games are resources, resource whatever it
management.
Is. Management.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and I agree, and I think that makes for a really rich theme that makes the gameplay so much better.
Yeah, I think I like themes that don't have a specific category, like fantasy or sci-fi, like maybe a game that kind of maybe masks all of the themes.
Uh-huh.
Or when we played Debonair, it was kind of like a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. So it was like a pick of each type of person.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the theme in that was strong, but it was not played out. And it really wasn't central to the gameplay. Now, I'll say this. I'm a big fan of theme. I won't take theme over mechanics, but I think theme makes a gameplay such a rich experience, and I love the narrative component of that. Now, something that's built too heavily on narrative overdoes it for me, but I like to be able to immerse myself in a world in the context of a game. Mm. So I really enjoy theme. I think theme makes a game really kind of go over the top for me.
Now, I don't want to get into a theme versus mechanics argument
right
you know, during this, but for example, Dominion, a lot of people say that doesn't have a theme.
Yeah,
I think it does. You're building your own personal Dominion.
Right.
Now, in your particular Dominion, you've got, you know, 10 jesters and a farm or whatever the case may be as you're building your deck. You know, but I get into that theme. I don't mind that theme.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. I think it's pretty open-ended. It's not narrative-driven, but it is thematic, I believe.
That could just be like a backstory is kind of what I think of those games. Like, the Settlers of Catan, is that a theme? Or is that just a backstory? You're just in a village?
It's a historical theme.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a pseudo-historical theme, yeah.
I think my favorite theme is the historical ones, like, you know, Settlers, maybe it's not in a certain time, but Thrones and Taxes is by far probably
Kalis.
One of my very favorites, Kalis.
Yeah.
Or like
so
Via
you're
Appia.
Kind of, yeah, Via Appia. You're like learning how they're doing something.
Yeah. No, I like historically themed game. I think a lot of games
that's
my favorite. Sort of have a nice foundation within a certain place in time and maybe a certain
and you're
culture.
Not role-playing or you don't have to be a certain
thing. Yeah.
You're just doing
Wizard.
It.
Now, is there a theme out there that you would like to see explored more that maybe it hasn't?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What about you guys? You got some thoughts on that? I mean, I have some thoughts.
I've got some thoughts, but it's really weird.
Okay, tell us about it. Oh, this sounds fun.
Maybe.
Okay, I would like to see more games, and I don't really like theme-heavy stuff, but if we're doing on the lighter end, if we could have more games that had anthropomorphic characters.
So animals
that are
people.
You just like to say that word.
I worked really hard to say it correctly.
So, well, you'll be very excited to hear about the new game I'm working on. It's called Furries.
I will play it.
It's tiles and dice.
And costumes.
And costumes.
Oh, no.
Okay. But no, you know, taking like a deer
yeah.
and making them more human, and then having this again.
Oh, it sounds really weird. I'm seeing Patrick in a giant teddy bear outfit.
I'm just saying.
Hey, everybody, I brought Cheetos.
And when he says he can see me in a giant teddy bear outfit, I'm wearing a giant teddy bear outfit.
But how many games have you seen that have that theme?
There's one out by Plaid Hat called Mice and Mystic.
Yeah, yeah, that's actually...
Okay.
Mystic is also another word for a wizard.
Oh, I hate it. But, you know, that theme goes along with wizards, like the talking deer and the fairies. That kind of is a...
You're ruining this for me, Carrie.
I don't know. I kind of like the fact you guys can't see this, but she actually kind of pranced around the table when she said fairies and deer.
Yeah. Well, like Seasons has got some kind of anthropomorphic animals in it.
Yeah. But I'm, you know, there isn't a game that I know of that's not geared towards 5-year-olds that have any anthropomorphic characters.
All right. Well, I think I'll get right on that. So, what about you, Rob?
I was thinking about this. I would like to see a game that is exploring into deeper earth, like a civilization meets dwarven exploration. Uh-huh. Maybe as you get deeper and deeper, you accumulate more victory points, or maybe you open a portal to hell, or who knows what you find, but it's going inner versus outer space.
Return to Moria.
You go
through the oceans and the reefs and all the different layers.
Keep the water out of it. We're going into the earth.
Just
and
the core.
We're seeing what's
the core.
In there, like
lava.
A journey to the center of the earth.
Yeah.
It's more of a civilization. You're trying to pull stuff. Maybe you're trying to pull resources out. Or maybe you, like I said, you unlock something that you have to fight. But something that goes into the earth.
Okay, Fantasy Flight, get on it.
Yeah,
the
artwork
would
be incredible.
Make a game.
Yeah. What about you, honey? What's the theme that you would like to see explored
more? Mine sounds so boring now.
What is it?
Well, my favorite themed game I played probably in this whole year is Pride and Prejudice. It's that Kickstarter game we played. And I absolutely loved it. I love that book, for one. I love all Jane Austen books. But you roll the dice, and then you get to, like, play your piano. You were horrible.
Right.
Sit in a corner.
So what?
Or you were so great, you got a date.
Like,
it just was so silly and so fun. And I think literature would be really fun. Like, taking some of... Maybe not a specific novel, but just a style of literature, you know?
Right.
You guys talked about how much fun that game was.
It really was fun.
But even just explaining it right then, I just wanted to maybe goes up on the table here and go to sleep.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what.
I know, it's not for everyone.
You play the piano wrong, go to the corner.
Well, I'll tell you a theme. I'll tell you a theme that I'm a Shakespearean scholar. Don't laugh at me.
You're in your teddy bear suit.
No.
That just sounds pretentious.
Furry or not
well, I don't mean to be pretentious.
Why don't you just say, I like Shakespeare?
All right,
I like Shakespeare,
but I really know
a
it well.
A scholar? Really, Patrick? A scholar?
I would go so far as to say that. But anyways, all right, everybody hates me now. But the point being, I love Shakespeare.
Okay.
Love it. And I know a lot about it. And I always thought it'd be really, really cool to do a game that was set in all of Shakespeare's plays. Like somehow brought all the characters together, you know, in that literature line. Carrie cannot get herself together because of my... All right, anyways, I
think that's a great idea.
I can't think of a Shakespeare game.
Yeah.
To give you that.
Yeah. Well, the other one.
Romeo and Juliet?
Is that a game somewhere?
Rodeo and Juliet?
Rodeo. Hey, is there any rodeo games? Like that?
No. Nice idea. But here's a theme that I actually would like to see explored more than just Shakespeare is science. Like hard science, real science. I am clearly, Hey guys,
hey.
I'm the cool guy in the room.
Okay, science. Let's talk more about science.
I like science-based games, like Pandemic.
Yeah, well, yeah, or like something that's set on the collider, you know? I don't know, something that is, you know, you're setting up the subatomic particles and you're trying to figure out the, you know, some game set within a cell, you know, or
like
something like that.
You could play in physics class.
Yeah.
At school.
Or just in my living room, you know?
You know what theme's really overdone that none of us had mentioned?
What's that?
Steampunk.
It wasn't, and then it just blew up.
It just went boom, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I remember about a year and a half ago, I was like, there needs to be more steampunk games. Steampunk is like, imagine a society where technology stopped at the Victorian era, but it's in today. So everything we have today, but it's all powered by steam and coal and that
sort of
stuff.
Lots of corsets and goggles.
Yes.
I like that theme, but I don't think I've ever played a game where that's
there's
the
quite
theme.
A few now.
Yeah,
well, it's really
me either. I can't,
Gear
but
World,
I like
a few
that.
Others.
Although one of our friends, I think, is going to a tournament this weekend. He said it was like a
You're talking about Android Netrunner. That's set kind of that's in a more of a cyberpunk.
That's a cyberpunk.
Yeah,
cyberpunk.
Yeah. Kind of a William Golding sort of neuromancer.
I kind of want to get into that card game. I know it's off topic, but I keep hearing a lot of people talk about
it. So, Patrick, when you were talking about science, so would like Power Grid be kind of like what you're talking about?
Well, no, I would think of Power Grid as more of a resource management game.
Oh, okay.
You know, I'm talking like, you know, something that takes a single principle of science,
like
and
gravity.
Then explores it in a game. Yeah, and it might be again, you know, like you're in some cellular setting and you're trying to gather everything into the nucleus. There's a game called or set in nature. There's a game called Mirmnes that's set about ants and that sort of thing, and it sort of explores the world. That kind of falls into that category for me. But anyways, let me ask you guys, what is a theme that you think appeals to women more so than it appeals to men? Ladies?
I think no themes.
Yeah, you think games. Abstract games are a little more appealing to women?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you come in hard-hitting with the dragons and the wizards, you might lose a large group of women who want to play that.
Right.
So I think if it doesn't have a theme or it's not overly themed...
Right.
You know, and even if a game is themed, mm-hmm. maybe the way you present it can be kind of lighthearted. Like, you know, you don't need to tell me that we're all Shaolin monks and we're exploring the dark depths. And I'm
like... You did not like that
I'm
theme.
Sorry.
Wait, what game is the Shaolin monk?
Shaolin monks is Ghost Stories.
Yeah.
So just
I didn't like that.
Tell me what we're doing.
Yeah.
And then I'll play.
Okay.
And then the theme can be a bonus.
Yeah. What about you, honey?
Pirates. Women love pirates.
Yeah.
I think all the pirate art... I mean, I just think of like all the women we've played with. Everyone's like, "Oh, look at this pirate! Oh, this pirate's great." Even the women pirates
and are sexy.
Pirates are sexy, and you are always like, you love the pirate women on all these art.
Yeah,
you like their corsets.
I
think that women like it. Like, it's fluffy.
Yeah, no, pirates are good.
I've got to say, there's going to be some listeners out there that are going to think, "Wait a minute! I love wizards and dragons and swords." We're going to get some emails.
Yeah,
I hope it's negative. What? Women like these things?
Yeah, I mean, look,
Rob is right.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely not speaking for all women.
Right.
But it's a general rule and on our experience. Yeah, okay. Well, so then the follow-up question for us is, what are some themes that we think appeal more broadly to men than to women?
Well, how about this? How about the girls answer that question, what they think we're going to answer?
Okay, well, do you guys have any thoughts about that? What do you think
we're going to say? What games you guys like that women don't like?
Yeah.
The games that maybe are themes that appeal to men versus women.
I think the fantasy.
Yeah, the fantasy sci-fi stuff.
Sci-fi.
And sci-fi being wizards. And
any themes where the women character have large boobs in them.
Yeah.
That's going to definitely appeal to you guys, where we're like, why is it? Why are they making this character?
Yeah, and
I'm
going to be honest with you. I have a big problem with that sort of sexualization within games or media, fantasy media or sci-fi. It bugs the ever living life out of me. But I do like a fantasy. I mean, I can see that guys like fantasy themes more than women. I definitely like sci-fi a great deal. I mean, it's probably my favorite theme.
I like war.
Yeah.
But war.
Monsters.
It could be realistic war. It could be future war. It could be warring of.
Battles.
Yeah, battles.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think war probably appeals to man.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably true. I think that's probably a theme that's a little more appealing to guys than women.
I don't know if it's a guy theme per se or if it's more of a style, but like those games that we've gone to a couple of like the gaming sessions.
Yeah.
And it's always the men who are like in these really heady kind of, maybe it's sci-fi, but these games where no one talks, like they are almost silent games.
Yeah, that's
and everyone's
more of,
just kind of hovering over their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that has no interest
at
all.
That's more of a style of game than
a style.
Theme of game.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I do think, you know,
but,
as you said.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, though, fantasy games, sci-fi games, those tend to be those types of style games.
Yeah, there's some
truth
to that.
The RPG games, those are pretty heavy themes.
Yeah.
So... I think, like Carrie said, fluffier for the women,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
other for the men.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you guys would?
Yeah,
do
I mean,
you agree?
I think there's some truth to that. I think guys generally, I'm in the minority among guys. I just don't get into fantasy themes that much. But I do get into sci-fi themes a lot. And I think those are, you know, and again, speaking in broad generalizations here, I think that's probably true. You know, one thing we haven't talked about is sort of the trading in the Mediterranean theme. Mm-hmm. That sort of theme. What are your guys' thoughts about that as
like
a theme?
The Greek Roman cultures?
Well, no,
trading
yeah.
in the Mediterranean.
Like ships?
The Egypts?
Well,
yeah.
There's a lot of games.
The Egyptians, I mean.
I want a speedboat theme.
Oh, man. Because
you could have traveled really fast.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking.
There's a big number of games, like, are in the Caribbean, Puerto Rico, Le Havre. You know, there's a lot of other games
like
that that are really about trading. You know, like setting up ports,
San
traveling
Marco,
to ports.
That was one.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that
Saint
game.
Marco,
I don't think Christina has played a lot of trading games in general.
You guys would love. We should play that
like a resource
soon.
Game.
Yeah, yeah. It has
kind
a quality of.
Of
that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, that's definitely a theme that some people love and some people just aren't into. Mm. It definitely has its haters out there.
I like water.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say I like that theme.
Okay. Well, good.
Water?
Yeah.
Yeah,
just
I like sailing. Sailing boats.
Oh, sailing.
The beach. I like to drink it.
I like to drink water.
Yeah. Now, here's a theme of game that I have not played a lot of, I confess, and that's sports-themed games. You know, they're out there. You know, and I've played several, you know, I've played a lot of soccer games, but beyond that, I haven't played a lot of other sports themed games.
I've got fantasy football and that's all I need. Like, I don't need actually a
board game,
a football or a sports based board game.
Right, right.
Fantasy football, cause that's like that's RPG. That is role playing for jocks.
Yeah, yeah, it
so
is.
So that kind of meets my, like, I don't have any desire for that.
Yeah.
But
what
I think if you're a game maker and you're wanting to kind of do an original game, that's probably a great idea because
yeah.
guys, especially that were hanging around playing like watching football,
yeah.
we're not that crowd, but there are people who do that and probably would love to play a game
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
that was simple and light and themed like
well, lots of people have tried
soccer.
It. And then some games are supposed to be really good. I just haven't been into it. Another theme that I want to ask you guys about is what about the adventure theme? You know, like Escape, Curse from the Temple that we played, you know, reviewed tonight. What are some other, you know, you guys like adventure games as a general rule, you know?
Yeah.
You know what?
Yeah.
That's, I like the theme.
Yeah.
I just don't like the execution of the theme with the game.
Right.
For example, Escape.
Right.
You know, I didn't really enjoy that one. Fortune and Glory
right.
is another one where it was, you know, you're adventuring out into the world. I like that idea, didn't like the game. So.
Yeah, yeah. There's another game that I'll have to introduce you to that I've played several times. I don't know if you've played yet. The Adventurers. It's a fun little adventures game. It's light and it's a little fluffy, but a lot of luck in it. But it's
a
fun game.
Is that the superhero game?
No, that's Legendary, and that's another theme I like a lot. Superheroes. But anyways, well, I think we've got a pretty good take on our thoughts on theme. You know, I mean, look, theme makes a game more immersive. It makes it more engaging.
Less.
Yeah, such as the case may be.
You know, come check out our Facebook page and tell us what themes you like.
Yeah.
Your spouse likes.
Yeah. We'll throw something up on our Facebook page and we'd love to hear your comments. If there's anything that we missed or if perchance we made an overarching generalization about
right.
whether or not women like fantasy.
Right. And if there's a lot of pro wizard love out there,
then we need to probably let it be.
Rob
needs
to feel actualized.
Make us correct. Call us correct. And also, if anybody has any illustrations for the anthropomorphic game
yes.
we'll be putting together.
We will
no
be
furries, please.
We'll be taking applications.
Send them our way. All right, well, Rob and I, we are the Blue Pegs.
And we're the Pink Pegs.
What was that? That was so Mickey Mouse.
Well, I thought it was adorable. Well, listen, you guys, thanks for joining us. And go out there, play some games, have some fun. Thanks for joining us on Blue Peg, Pink Peg. If you want to find out more about Blue Peg, Pink Peg, why don't you go to our website at www.bluepegpinkpeg.com. There you can read more about Blue Peg, Pink Peg, and check out our show notes where we have links to all of the things that we discuss during our show. You can also go and check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Stitcher, and Board Game Geek, all by searching out Blue Peg, Pink Peg. You can also find us on iTunes, and if you enjoy the show, why don't you go to iTunes and give us a rating or give us a review? It helps other people find out more about what we do. Blue Peg Pink Peg is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Blue Peg Pink Peg is a production of In Your Ear Media, all rights reserved. Blue Peg Pink Peg's theme music is written by Kevin MacLeod.